WFHB and the Lotus World Music and Arts Foundation have always shared close ties with each other and the Bloomington community. Our first broadcast at the airwaves in 1993, Lotus threw its first festival a year later, bringing culture bearers from around the world into various Bloomington venues, including the WFHB studios. Now, a small team of Lotus staff is chronicling those years with the initiative Lotus at 30. Project co-managers Jeremy Reed and Luann Holliday dropped by the firehouse to talk about the work they're doing, institutional memory, and how community members can get involved. Can you give us a brief overview of the Lotus at 30 initiative?
Sure. So this year in 2024, the Lotus Education and Arts Foundation is turning 30. And we thought that this would be a good moment to take a second and reflect on where Lotus has been over 30 years and where it's going into its next 30-year chapter, hopefully. And so we're doing three components of this project. One is archiving and digitizing a whole bunch of ephemera and organizational documents, as well as repatriating a whole bunch of videos from CATS, Community Access Television Services, here in Bloomington. We're conducting oral history interviews with volunteers, with committee members, with board members, with anyone who has been part of the Lotus orbit over the past 30 years to better understand some through lines and evolutionary arcs over the course of Lotus's 30-year history. And then we're also working on some public-facing engagement opportunities based on all of this work. We'll be screening some footage. We'll be exhibiting images and documents from the archive that we're creating. And generally speaking, we want to celebrate the diverse work that has gone into 30 years of Lotus.
Lee and I were the first two full-time paid staff. I started as a volunteer in maybe 97. Because of my long experience with Lotus on the administrative side, I started accumulating a lot of documents. And actually, I've been digitizing a lot of things that I clipped and put in notebooks way back in the day, moldering pieces of newsprint. And it's a fascinating process, and it gives me an amazing long view of the total Lotus landscape. And that plus the interviews that we're doing, plus the video, and I would even say thinking about WFHB and all of the recording, the amazing interviews and live performances. It's a really rich, deeply textured picture of 30 years of existence. And I'm just going to say right up front that hitting 30 years, which FHB has done as well, it is a thing to celebrate. Because so many nonprofits, so many radio stations, they don't last that long. And so figuring out a way to celebrate it is important, and it takes work. Jeremy and I have been discovering a lot about what it takes to even attempt something like this. It is resource intensive, especially in terms of person hours.
So far, Luann has scanned 857 documents and she's indicating that it's more, but that's how much we've tracked in our tracking document. There are 295 recordings over at CATS that we've uploaded. Some have been digitized already. Some are in the process of. There's video footage from 1994, so from the very first year of Lotus. There is video footage from venues past, venues present. There is even some footage of Lotus Blossoms in its early years. There is some footage of the Lotus Parade. So far, we've interviewed over a dozen individuals associated with Lotus, and we will add dozens more by the time we're done with this. And this is just a sliver of the Lotus experience and a sliver of Lotus history.
I am curious about, as you've been looking through this initial information and even just aggregating all of that data, aggregating all of those archives, if you can talk about some of the themes and the through lines that you've found in terms of how Lotus is such an important part of Bloomington and these networks that Lotus is part of, these networks that WFHB and Lotus and all of these other organizations are part of.
So I think one thing that is incredibly remarkable about Lotus is that it happens in the downtown district of Bloomington. It's had to work to earn its right to occupy that much space. It had to earn its right to close off streets. But the thing that comes up in our interviews over and over again, and when you talk to people about what makes Lotus so special for them as people who live and are part of the Bloomington community, is the public presence of the festival, that regardless of where you are downtown, you can hear it. In many places, you can see it. And it's not just the tents that are outside. It's the flags that you see. It's the people that are walking around. It is the sounds that are coming, that are emanating from the doors of the venues throughout the downtown district. And that public sense of something happening here in Bloomington, whether it's the world in Bloomington, the world coming to Bloomington, or just the Bloomington world itself just coming alive for 4 days, is a remarkable thing. And there are different aspects of that that have come out in some of our interviews, people talking about how much they love the dancing in the tents, or how much they love the flags, or some other aspect of the public scene. But it is that sense of Bloomington as sound, Bloomington as a site, Bloomington as a public experience coming to life. That's probably been one of the biggest and most enduring themes that have come out through this project.
There's a certain hand-built, handmade, absolute community build quality to Lotus, as is the case with FHB. Even as they've grown and become established and gotten more sophisticated, maybe. For example, the flags that Jeremy mentioned, those are those orange and white tall flags. They weren't ordered from some remote company. People locally made them. Members of the Bloomington Quilters Guild, I believe. A lot of the, well, all of the backdrops that we've had at the Buskirk Chumley, those are made by local artists. And most obviously, the quality of the artists who appear on Lotus stages and who come through the studios here is remarkable. There is a remarkable quality, and there are discoveries to be made.
So amongst our partners, FHB has been, a long one throughout the, we're the same age. But we were noticing as we're going through past programs that many of the early sponsors of the Lotus Festival and of the organization have been, are still our sponsors today, whether it's One World, whether it's Morgan Stearns in its initial configuration. And, what we're doing is as much a documentation of Bloomington community history as it is about a festival. And the festival is part of the organization. It's our flagship event, but the organization has other components and dimensions to it, whether it's Lotus Blossoms or other aspects of what the organization wishes to do. But this is a, as I said, a documentation of Bloomington history, of community history over 30 years. And Bloomington and Lotus are different in 1994 than both entities are now in 2024. And so it's also engagement with where we are at as a community. Generally speaking, post-pandemic, in a few different frames, and as we think about where Bloomington and Lotus are both going over the next 30 years.
I think one thing about Bloomington that I find really fascinating is that there's kind of this idea, because it's a college town, that there is a binary between townies and students. And there's this idea. And then there are organizations like Lotus that complicate that, I feel, and then further expand the definition of what Bloomington is as a community, who it's made up of, and who is welcome here and who belongs here, by bringing in artists from all over the world. But also there's a wide range of genres. There are artists from Bloomington. There are artists who are from nearby. And then also the people who are working on Lotus and who attend Lotus. I mean, it's such a mix of townies and students and people who are both and people who are neither. And to me, that's really fascinating and really important. I think WFHB and Lotus both have mission statements that talk about expanding local cultural diversity. I'm curious, as you've been doing interviews and focus groups, how you've heard people talk about or indicate kind of their understandings of what
Bloomington is and how Lotus has impacted their understandings of Bloomington as a community or their sense of community.
So we've had a few people bring up that Lotus has become an important part of their Bloomington calendar. And this is something that I think is particularly special to festivals. Festivals, you know, happen on somewhat of a, you know, consistent basis, whether it's every year or every other year. And so it gives people who are part of that community, whether it's the festival community or the host community, it gives them a sense of, you know, time and calendar. So I think that's part of it. We've spoken with people who moved to Bloomington and found community through Lotus. We've also spoken with people who grew up in Bloomington and have also found community through Lotus. I started my involvement with Lotus because there was an offer. So I'm a PhD student in the Department of Folklore and Ethnomusicology at IU, and we had an internship opportunity with Lotus that was presented to me by the then executive director, Sunny Fass, who herself was a student of my department. And it's given me an opportunity to engage with Lotus, with the Bloomington community through Lotus, with concerns that people in Bloomington have about what happens to their community, whether in terms of environmental awareness, urban expansion awareness, labor and immigration awareness. It makes me feel like I'm more of a part of the Bloomington community, and I know others feel that as well. You yourself, Luann, are also a transplant.
Oh yeah, I transplanted here much, much, much longer ago than either of you. But yeah, I came to Bloomington in 84 as a grad student and never left. And I've been to every Lotus just because I don't not go to Lotus. It becomes a habit, just an assumption that it's not just a part of our calendar, but it's an essential part of my life in this community. And with every conversation I've ever had, whether it's through this project or just random conversations during the festival or during the year with people who know that I've been involved with Lotus, everybody has their own particular relationship to things Lotus. And by Lotus, I mean more than just the festival. I mean things like Lotus Blossoms, the explicitly educational outreach instrument. For me, it's as much about relationships with people and being among people that I really respect and enjoy the company of as it is seeing amazing performances. It is very much about my relationship with individuals in this community.
So we often get asked, especially in this kind of post-pandemic period of the festival, how we're going to get more artists from around the world in the context of global conflict and the context of visa issues. But something that's important to remember is the world has become, for better and for worse, from violence and natural movement, a more diasporic place. And we have communities in our own community, in our own country, that have either been displaced or they have moved from their communities of origin, and they still represent where they're from, and they still represent who they are, and also represent the changes and experiences that they've gone through in that process. And we feature those artists at Lotus. Other world music festivals do as well.
And this is fresh in my mind because a set of documents I was recently digitizing was from 2005, and that was the first year of Lotus in the Park. And when the mayor's office, the city gave Lotus $15,000 to launch that as a free, easily accessible event for the community that, you know, would take away the whole notion of having to buy a ticket for anything Lotus. But it was also a three-part partnership. It was the city, IU, and Lotus is how it was framed, because this IU Global Education Pavilion thing was part of it. And that, as well as the bazaar, which relies on a lot of IU study centers and grad students to come in and share cultures and activities with fourth graders and other young folk and adults around the community. Those two things provide an easy access point for university entities who want to broaden their community outreach easily. They don't have to create a mechanism to do it. Lotus provides it. We provide a conduit, and it makes our programming better, and it makes their work better too.
And it should also be reminded that the three kind of founding figures of Lotus include Lee Williams, a promoter, a booking agent in the community. It also involves Dr. Shahyar Daneshkar, an IU professor. Also involves James Combs, who is a community musician. So that pretty much represents the answer in a nutshell in terms of the origins of the festival. And there's always been a strong link between IU and Lotus. We have been putting out a call for participation in these focus groups, these oral history interviewing events. There's a call that's gone out on our social media. We've also sent out links via listserv and by personal email. 30yearsoflotus.projectmanager@lotusfest.org.
And that is 30.
And that is 30. So 30yearsoflotus.projectmanager@lotusfest.org.
One of the challenges of getting people to participate in this is just to take the time. The little sign up module allows for 3 hours. In practice, it tends to be around two. And we are very willing to work with people to work around the 2 days that we have marked for regular sessions. Because the more voices, the more memories, the better. And it's always a lot of fun.
One of the benefits, the key benefits to developing an archive like this is institutional memory and being able to see some of those through lines, encounters with some of the same problems under different leadership. Our current executive director, Katerina Koch, is trying to wrap her brain and her whole sense of self around what's going on with a 30-year organization. And what this is able to do is, you know, like she can call up some of those old press clippings and see how we dealt with, say, the festival falling on a Jewish high holiday. And I'll just finish by saying, you know, I just want to mention a few names. Our project wouldn't be a thing without the support of Lotus staff. So that includes Katerina Koch. That includes Tamar Lowenthal, our artistic director, Jill Campbell, our community outreach director, and Kathleen Clark-Perez, who does all of our media and marketing stuff, in addition to the board. But without Lotus staff, present but also past, we cannot do what we do.
There are so many interesting story strands that I hope somebody will pick at. And it's interesting, I think, not just for Lotus, but for other nonprofits who, you know, who have stories to tell. This is true of Lotus. This is true of WFHB. We were not high concept things. We emerged from our local soil. We branched and suckered and sprouted. We moved in one direction and had to be hacked back, sort of thing. It is that organic process. It's sometimes invigorating and exhilarating. Other times it creates problems down the road because you got to look back and say, why did we do that? And that's how a project like this can help us look back and understand how we got to where we are in both our strengths and our weaknesses and be able to interpret some of that.